Hello there and welcome. Today is Wednesday, July 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, Americans celebrate the nation's birthday.
Fireworks!
North Korea's latest missile launch was powerful enough to reach parts of the United States.
It is a considerable increase over missiles we've seen them launch before.
President Trump prepares to meet with world leaders at the G20 summit. Also ahead, the latest news out of Hollywood. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, the U.S. says it has conducted a joint exercise with South Korea as a show of solidarity in the wake of North Korea's launch Tuesday of a missile that some experts say could reach parts of the western U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said the missile test was with an intercontinental ballistic missile, and he called it a new escalation of the threat posed to the United States and the world by North Korea. It will be brought up before the U.N. Security Council. U.S. Ambassador to the U.N., Nikki Haley, has asked for an emergency meeting with the council. That meeting is expected to take place on Wednesday. David Wright of the Union of Concerned Scientists says it appears to have been the most powerful missile launch to date, potentially powerful enough to reach the U.S. state of Alaska.
They did what they have done in recent launches, which is they've launched on a very, very high trajectory, almost straight up. So the range is not that long, and that's so that it will come down in the Sea of Japan without flying over Japan, which in the past has caused a lot of consternation in Japan. What the calculation that I did was to look at how far it flew before it splashed down and the flight time, and that told me that it flew very, very high. And then you can say how long would that same missile fly on a normal trajectory. And what you come up with, according to my calculations, is about 6,700 kilometers. Now, that's technically considered to be an intercontinental missile. The technical way people talk about an intercontinental range missile is anything over 5,500 kilometers. That range missile would allow North Korea to reach all of Alaska, but would not allow it to reach the lower 48 states or the main Hawaiian islands. But it is a considerable increase over missiles we've seen them launch before. And I think what it says is that North Korea is continuing to move forward with its ability to make longer and longer range missiles.
Well, the test launch would be a potential game-changing development in what may be the world's most dangerous nuclear standoff and a direct rebuke of President Trump's earlier declaration that such a test, quote, won't happen. The missile launch came as the U.S. marked its 241st Independence Day, and just days before a G20 summit in Hamburg, Germany, where President Trump is expected to meet his Chinese and Russian counterparts. VOA's Victor Beatty asked Bruce Bennett, defense analyst with RAND Corporation, for his thoughts on the latest actions by North Korea.
It is a little surprising, but not entirely. I mean, we usually assume that North Korea is doing this all by themselves, that they're not getting any foreign help. And yet I think there's every reason to believe that they probably have some scientists from perhaps Russia, perhaps China, who have worked on developing this kind of missile and are providing information on what a warhead looks like and how it gets through the atmosphere. So I think it's not at all surprising that they've made these advances.
You mentioned Russia and China. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson issued a statement. Obviously, the U.S. strongly condemning this latest launch of an ICBM, which, by the way, the Pentagon did confirm on Tuesday. He said it represents a new escalation. He said global action is required. North Korean guest workers, economic military benefits, fully implementing UN Security Council resolutions. Any country that is involved in not doing this or doing this completely is aiding and abetting a dangerous regime. Are Russia and China complicit?
Well, we don't know for sure. I mean, even if there are Russian or Chinese scientists who have been helping North Korea, it's unlikely that they were directly approved by their governments. I mean, some of those people are out of jobs, especially in Russia, and maybe doing it on their own. So there would be a burden of proof on our part to determine that. But certainly China is doing a brisk economic business with North Korea. Russia has been doing business. We've just heard that Russia is sending substantial amounts of oil to North Korea each year from a recent defector. So this is a really big set of developments that we need to worry about, to the degree to which China and Russia are being responsible.
President Trump will have an opportunity to speak directly to the leaders of those two countries. Is that going to be an interesting two sessions?
Oh, I think it should be very interesting, because both of those countries are likely not going to want to take any further action, that certainly not more than a marginal change in what they're doing. Russia's probably very happy to see the United States suffering with this threat. China's been more supportive and helpful, but on the other hand, it's inconsistent. Their action on THAAD, for example, certainly unrealistic given the experiences we're seeing here.
One analyst, Patrick Cronin, an Asia expert with the Center for New American Security, said President Trump is probably, quote, coming to the point of no return with North Korea, adding the upshot could be diplomatic overtures or military action. Where are we in this process?
Don't know for sure, because President Trump hasn't said, but let's face it. You have to ask, are we better letting North Korea develop hundreds of nuclear weapons and threatening South Korea with those and telling South Korea to surrender to North Korea for it to take over South Korea? Do we really want to wait for that, or do we want to confront North Korea sooner? It's a hard trade-off, but we may have to face a military confrontation that leads to war sooner or later. And it's probably better if it's sooner because of the growing threat.
UN Security Council plans to meet in emergency session on Wednesday afternoon. What might be discussed?
Well, in the past, when North Korea's made this kind of major advancement, there have been some form of sanctions put in place. The real question is, what direction is the U.S. going to go in asking for sanctions? Or is it going to ask for something more than sanctions? Is it going to ask for justification for some form of military operation against the North? At this stage, we don't know, but at least sanctions have got to be on the table. And one would think that these would be very restrictive, that the U.S. would be prepared to say, if your bank does deal with North Korea, we're not going to let you do business with the United States, which is the role of U.S. secondary sanctions. But the administration, Obama administration, was reluctant to implement that, and the Trump administration has only gone marginally beyond what Obama did.
Do you anticipate Trump administration will have to revise its policy toward North Korea?
Yeah, I think the Trump administration is going to have to now give North Korea a choice. They can choose to stop this behavior, or the U.S. is going to start turning, I would think, to various forms of seeking for the regime to change. So far, the United States has been clear that we were not going to push for regime change. But North Korea is putting the United States in a very difficult position where we may have to consider that alternative. That's been very foolish of North Korea to do that.
And this could be the biggest crisis facing the Trump presidency.
Absolutely.
That's Bruce Bennett, defense analyst with RAND Corporation. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. The U.S. defends its travel ban restrictions. U.S. carrying out airstrikes against al-Shabaab in Somalia. African officials seek tougher penalties against fake drug imports. And Tesla says its Model 3 car will go on sale on Friday. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Americans celebrated the birth of the United States. They do it every year on July 4th. It's a national holiday day, which means most people have the day off from work. At the White House, President Trump welcomed military families.
Welcome, everyone. The rain stopped just as we came out. I don't know what that means, but it's not bad. And happy 4th of July. Great honor to have you with us. Melania and I truly appreciate and celebrate America's independence with those who courageously defend our country, the men, women, and families of the United States military. It is because of you that well over 300 million American citizens can live in freedom.
Well, there are public festivities across the United States, and the night sky exploded with fireworks. VOA's Arash Arabasadi asked people on the National Mall in Washington if they felt like it was a happy birthday year for the nation and how they planned to celebrate.
Fireworks!
Fireworks reminiscent of the war when Americans united fought for the new nation's independence from Britain. Less than 6 months into President Donald Trump's administration, political issues and divisions are on many Americans' minds.
The president is very rough in his character, and we are not making peace right now between both parties, the Republican and the Democrats.
Trump is doing enough behind the scenes and getting things together, and more people are, I think, starting to see positives that are happening, and I hope that, you know, in a few years, this whole nation starts getting together.
You got both sides, you know, battling, and things are good, you know, overall, for most Americans.
Independence Day is a celebration of the American dream.
I believe the principles of a free nation still holds good, and here you have what you envision and what you endeavor, you can always accomplish. That makes this nation so special.
I think this country at this moment is great, and it's very peaceful, and people really enjoy their life here.
When you look at the national opinion, people think that the country is not going well, but until they compare what is happening to the rest of the world, then they will know that the country is doing well.
In the end, America's birthday is a national holiday.
So I get a day off, so I'll take it as a happy birthday, a day off to relax. So yeah, I don't know about America. All I know is that I'm glad to be here. It's amazing food, an amazing place. I love the fireworks, the many things that we've created. I'm just glad to be here.
July 4th here is an outdoor party with a parade, bands, and of course, fireworks. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
And you're listening to International Edition on VOA. Apparently I am missing a page. Sorry about that, folks. President Trump and German Chancellor Angela Merkel are on a collision course of issues, including the climate and trade at Friday summit of the G20 summit leading economies in Hamburg. But as VOA correspondent Luis Ramirez reports, counterterrorism and Chinese steel dumping could bring them together.
As police step up patrols and protesters set up camp, no one is expecting an easy weekend in Hamburg. Angela Merkel pledges to work toward consensus, but foresees no miracles in her relations with the U.S. administration.
I think there is a high degree of similarities. On other issues, there is a high degree of differences. And therefore, I don't want to anticipate the talks. But I do not think we will have unified positions on all issues at the end. But it is sensible and honest to talk to each other on all issues of international diplomacy.
President Trump says he has bold plans to slap tariffs or impose quotas on steel imports, the latest and perhaps most serious of threats to protect U.S. industry and part of his America First strategy, one that has G20 partners feeling nervous.
And what he's doing, he's throwing all kinds of cards up in the air, NAFTA, a critique of climate change, because he actually wants, I think, a bit of zero-based policy. I think at the end of the day, he probably, of course, wants free trade in the win-win sense. But what he's trying to expose is perhaps some of the hypocrisy of countries like China, who talk the talk of openness, but don't always deliver. So there's going to be a real clash of the titans at this summit.
Trump's shock talk has brought results. After threatening to not stand by NATO allies who do not pay their share of defense, came pledges by members to boost their contributions. He said he would rip up the North American Free Trade Agreement, and now he has a deal with Mexico on sugar exports. The U.S. leader's target now is China and its cheap steel exports that are blamed for killing jobs not only in the United States, but in Britain and other G20 states, including Germany. Climate is a big issue for some G20 leaders, but analysts say the threat of cheap Chinese steel imports could be a common cause and take precedence.
Many of the G20 members are experiencing exactly the same kinds of economic forces and constraints that the US is facing. So, for example, in the UK, the steel mills in Port Talbot and Redcar were closed because of really overcapacity of supply by the China steel sector. That's not very much different from what's been going on in Ohio and Pennsylvania. So I think that this actually has the opportunity, the chance, to get a lot of support.
If leaders manage to find common ground, it will be in sharp contrast to what is on the streets of Hamburg, where protesters have been out since early in the week. Luis Ramirez, VOA News, London.
And you're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Hi, this is Victor Beatty, Managing Editor of VOA News. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, the host for Jazz America, where each week we give you the best of jazz past and present and conversation with the music makers. You can hear the program online at voanews.com and on the air on VOA each Saturday and Sunday at 13 hours Universal Time. Join me for Jazz America and help me celebrate the greatness of a century of jazz. Listen at 13 hours Universal Time, Saturdays and Sundays, on voanews.com and the Voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues now with news out of Hollywood. For that, we turn to Rare.us content editor Nicole Moschella. Nicole, thanks for being with us. Some pretty intense news about E! News host Maria Menounos. What can you tell us?
So Maria Menounos came forward this week and talked about a diagnosis that she faced earlier this summer. Doctors found a golf ball-sized tumor growing in her brain, and she underwent surgery on June 9th, which actually happened to be her June 8th. She underwent surgery on June 8th, which happened to be her 39th birthday, and doctors were able to successfully remove 99.9% of that tumor, and she has only about a 6 or 7% chance of having it grow back in her lifetime. And in her interview, she said that she's happy with those chances. She'll take those chances. It's better than anything else. But even more tragically than being diagnosed with such a scary thing so young, is the fact that she is caring for her mother, who is currently battling stage 4 cancer. Her mother did recently have an MRI that said that the cancer is stable at this time, but it was really kind of a rocky situation for a while there for Maria. She is leaning on her fiance of just a year. They've been together almost 20 years. His name is Kevin Undergaro. And on top of all of this that she's facing with her health, she actually announced she will be stepping down from her spot in E! News. She'll be leaving the network altogether, and she wants to focus on her family, her health, and some of her passion projects. And she even talked about possibly starting a family with her fiance. So it sounds like now that this kind of scary time in her life is over, she's ready to reflect and make some changes and get on the road to happiness.
That's some big stuff there and some big decisions, obviously, when something like that happens. What else? I know we have some news about Venus Williams, the famous tennis star.
Yes, she broke down this week during a press conference at Wimbledon. She's currently there competing. She broke down after a reporter asked her about a car accident she was involved in earlier in June. On June 9th, she was driving near her home in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, when she, according to reports, was in an intersection and shouldn't have been, and an oncoming car T-boned her, The driver and the passenger of the vehicle were both taken to the hospital. They were a husband and wife. The wife was treated. She was driving the vehicle, treated for her injuries and released. But unfortunately, the husband had to be admitted to the ICU, and he later passed away. He was 78 years old. Mm-hmm. So now the family of the victim is suing Venus for a wrongful death. So when the reporter brought up the case, she immediately broke down. She was crying, and she said, "I'm just completely speechless." The moderator had to jump in and just remind the room that she is not allowed to speak any details about the victim, his family, the accident, or this ongoing lawsuit at this time. It's a really tough time for her because it was a tragedy. It just was an accident.
Wow, it is a tragedy for sure all the way around. Rare.us content editor Nicole Moschella, thank you so much.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA spent about $2.5 billion of U.S. taxpayer money to build the Curiosity robotic laboratory currently cruising across and exploring Mars. But like all mechanical devices, Curiosity runs the risk of malfunctioning and breaking down. Here on Earth, we'd normally call a repair person or a mechanic to fix our broken-down device. But when it's on another planet some 54.6 million kilometers away, what can you do? The space agency decided the only thing it really can do is to make sure the rover is driving across the surface of the red planet as carefully as possible. So, they designed new software to help ensure it does just that. The software, uploaded to the rover in March 2017, referred to as traction control, regulates the speed of Curiosity's wheels depending on the rocks it's climbing. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Well, you have heard of the Oscar Awards for the best in film, of course, and probably the Tonys celebrating the best on Broadway. Now, get ready for the Jimmy Awards, which were handed out last week. They were named for the late Broadway theater owner and producer James Nederlander, and they were given to the best high school musical theater performers in the United States. Reporter Jeff London followed two of them as they got ready to take center stage on Broadway.
The dream of performing on Broadway came true for 74 high school actors, singers, and dancers, selected from 50,000 young performers across the United States. They came to New York for the National High School Musical Theater Awards.
Welcome to New York!
They jumped right in, learning the opening medley for a show they would perform on Broadway in just 1 week. Seventeen-year-old Felix Torres came from Green Bay, Wisconsin. He qualified for the Jimmys by playing the Beast in Beauty and the Beast at his high school.
Being here already is an award itself. Being able to perform on Broadway as a high schooler, I just want to soak it all in.
18-year-old Jasmine Rogers from Houston, Texas did too. She played the witch in Into the Woods. Unlike Felix, she's seen many Broadway shows.
I didn't get into musical theater until I was 7. I used to play the violin, and I was bad at it, by the way. And one day a flyer came home to do a production of Peter Pan. And so I auditioned, and I fell in love with it from there on, and I've been doing it since.
For 8 days, these teenagers were pushed hard. Only a few days after that first rehearsal, they had staged the opening number. Keisha LaLama, the show's choreographer, says she expects a lot.
You know, if you treat them like professionals and really just challenge them to rise up, they do. And that's what I think is so amazing about it, is that these kids are willing and able. And if you provide them with the opportunity, they can thrive.
One of those opportunities is that each participant is coached by a Broadway actor. Howard McGillin, who's done more performances of The Phantom of the Opera than anyone in history, coached Felix.
Really? That's exciting. Can you take more time before you sing the last title of the song?
Monday morning was dress rehearsal.
Take your positions. I just want you to see exactly what's going to happen so everybody's got it in their head.
Just a few hours later, the curtain went up before a sold-out house on Broadway.
The heat
the heat is on in New York.
Felix donned his beast costume and sang his solo.
No spirit could win me, and no hope left within me.
Then the finalists were announced.
Now the ladies, the finalists are, from the Tommy Tune Awards in Houston, Texas, Jasmine Rogers.
And so in front of friends, family, and a lot of important Broadway producers and casting directors, Jasmine sang, all alone, in a spotlight, center stage.
All I have to do is pretend I never knew him. On those very rare occasions when he steals into my
She didn't win the Best Actress award, but the experience itself was the prize. Both Jasmine Rogers and Felix Torres said they made new friends, polished their performing skills, and came away with a confidence that they would definitely be back on Broadway. For VOA News, I'm Jeff London in New York.
You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Daryl Smith. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions. This is one of a series on the U.S. Constitution and the structure of the U.S. government.
To protect individual rights, the framers of the United States Constitution added 10 amendments to the document, which came into force in 1792, 3 years after the Constitution itself did. These amendments are collectively named the Bill of Rights. Arguably, the First Amendment is also the most important to the maintenance of a democratic government. It states that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or the right of people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. The first part of that statement reflects the framers' experience with the long history of religious strife in Europe. They realize that religious discord can be explosive and cause tremendous disruption in politics. It would be doubly so if one religious sect were favored over all others. So they argued that the federal government cannot interfere in the citizens' practice of their religion. The freedoms of speech, press, assembly, and the right to petition the government and seek redress of grievances proclaim that citizens have the right to call the government to account. Freedom of speech and press allows citizens to communicate their ideas verbally and in writing, while freedom of assembly lets them publicly express a common interest. The right to petition allows citizens to point out to the government where it did not follow the law, to seek changes as well as damages for such missteps. Of course, there are limits to these freedoms. One may not force the tenets of his or her religion on those who do not observe those beliefs. Harmful speech, such as yelling fire in a crowded room, is not protected, nor is a written lie that causes harm. As well, gatherings must be peaceful. Destruction of the property of others is not protected by the First Amendment. Liberty is to faction, political parties, or movements what air is to fire, an aliment without which it instantly expires, said James Madison, the principal framer of the Constitution. But it could not be less folly to abolish liberty, which is essential to political life, because it nourishes faction, than it would be to wish the annihilation of air, which is essential to animal life, because it imparts to fire its destructive agency.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.